We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
That is Nick Hostetler, White Sox Director of Scouting. We've got a Director of Amateur Scouting. We've got a chunk of that interview from yesterday's Hit and Run show that we're going to play for you.
I got chunks of guys like you in my stool.
Thank you, Joe Piscopo's impression of Frank Sinatra. Appreciate that.
You are black and I am white. You are blind as a bat and I have sight.
We'll play that chunk of Nick Hostetler for you a little bit later. On in the hour, I am tweeting a link as we speak to the very cool MMQB all-time NFL draft in which Dan Fouts has exposed himself as remarkably football intelligence challenged. And I
know you were fascinated by it because of Dan Fouts, but I'm just fascinated by it.
Because it's a cool concept? Because it's a fun thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, we could, if we have time, and I can't imagine why we wouldn't because I don't really know exactly why we don't seem to have a lot of really important things to get to.
That's ridiculous. I have incredibly important, thoughtful things to get to that are compelling and rich and will feed interaction of all kinds, Barry. My goodness. This segment is brought to you by AutoZone. Hurry in, save big, get a $20 AutoZone gift card by mail-in rebate when you buy select automotive batteries. Restrictions and details apply. Limit 2. Get in the zone, AutoZone.
What do we got to do? We can't spare 15 minutes.
we'll talk about it later. All right?
I mean, looking at how the quarterbacks went and the running backs went.
Really weird.
It's, I know.
Makes me want to do one.
Historically speaking, this is some really... really interesting stuff.
This is Bill and Lombard on the Score as we've been talking about the Cubs rebuild, the White Sox rebuild, comparing, contrasting, knowing the differences in the starting points very well. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
Great.
Thanks. I just had a couple comments and then a question. Well, I agree that, you know, when you compare the rebuilds, obviously I think the White Sox have had a lot more trade chips, which you guys mentioned, and they have been able to accumulate some assets a lot quicker than the Cubs. But, you know, hopefully they're not, you know, the one thing I mentioned is the Cubs were extremely, I don't want to say lucky or whatever, did a good job, but they pretty much hit on just about everything.
Yep.
I mean, there was really no misses along the way for the Cubs. And, you know, so I think potentially, you know, trying to think that maybe the Sox could do it as quickly or quicker is a pretty tall order. I guess my question is what percentage, because I've lived through this, you know, before this rebuild as a Cubs fan, what percentage of misses do normally, you know, do you think happen along the way in a normal situation? And my question is, like let's say Jimenez or Robert or Mankata, one of them winds up being a total bust. How far back does that put this rebuild?
That's a great phone call, Bill. Great phone call and a great question. I'd love to look at that percentage of, I think it's low, percentage of like top, let's say top 50 MLB prospects that have turned into bona fide all-stars somehow over the last 30 years. That would be fun to look at and get some math on. I have not seen it done. Have you, Barry?
Not specifically in regards to all-stars, but I think generally speaking, if you have 10 great prospects, which the White Sox have right now, and I think it'll be more like 20 by the time they get done with next year, you're lucky if one is a superstar, one is a good contributing player, and one is just a guy on your roster. If you go 3 for 10, I think you've done really well. So along those lines, I don't think you should think in terms of what if one of these guys is a bust, how far does it set you back? I don't think that's how you view it. I think you just view it in terms of sheer numbers. You collect as many as you possibly can. If they have 10 monster guys now, guys I would consider to be A-plus prospects, you want to get that number somewhere up near 20, and then you start to deal the ones that maybe you identify before somebody else does.
You self-scout better than everybody else.
This is what made the Atlanta Braves great for two decades, was they self-scouted better than anybody else.
And they would sell people on Kent Merker and, You know, Jason Schmidt, even though he did come back around
and
have a nice
Tarasco,
career.
You know, whoever it was.
Chen.
Whoever it was, they didn't seem to really get hurt very often.
Not very often.
You know, and they wouldn't. No one could touch Chipper Jones. No one could touch Andrew Jones. No one could touch Javi Lopez. No one could touch Glavin. No one could touch Smoltz. They seemed to be able to identify their guys.
Michael Tucker come up with them first and then go to Kansas City? I think so. Right?
I don't remember.
To your point, you're absolutely right.
But you think of the number, even Klesko, like they recognized when there was a problem there and they moved him before he got bad and they were able to capitalize on that. But whatever they needed, mm-hmm. if they needed Fred McGriff, they had the chips to go get him. If they needed Marquise Grissom, they had the chips to go get him. If they needed to, if they needed a closer or they need another arm in the bullpen.
Sure, and the Cubs have done that, as noted last week.
So the position for the Sox is just accumulate. Just keep doing it. I don't think they're anywhere near starting to have the conversation about who's going to play where and when and how good will they be when they get here. Mm-hmm. They are merely accumulating right now, and they need to continue to do that. They need to score big on Robertson, too. Every one of these matters.
Yeah, yesterday was a rough day for his trade value with the Nationals getting Madsen and Doolittle going that way. Hadn't you dreamed of a Robertson and Tommy Kahnle combo to go out there?
Hey, even Swarzak has value now, too. I just don't think the Nats were going to deal with the Sox again. I just think politically it was a bad spot for them to even do it, or else it would have happened as far back as December after the Eaton deal. I just don't think you could consider that in the climate in which they were operating. So you take that out of it. Yeah. I don't think the Nationals were going to be part of it anyway. Nevertheless, the Nationals need a closer. They didn't get a closer yesterday.
Doolittle's done it sometimes.
No, but they were both former closers, but neither has been closing for Oakland, and neither one of them is what you consider to be a guy you go into the postseason with as your closer. They're good bullpen arms. They need four. So they still need two more, and they certainly need a closer. Mm-hmm. Whether they're going to do that or not, I don't know. But this is a start. This is not an end for them.
The Cubs turned international signings Jorge Soler, Eloy Jimenez, and Gleyber Torres into Aroldis Chapman, Wade Davis, and now Jose Quintana. Your major league help, one to win you a title, one to arm you with one of the best closers in baseball, and now one to give you a starter for the middle of your winning window. That's what you're looking to do.
Right. That's the point. That's exactly the point. You just add as many assets as you possibly can, and you'll see how it shakes out. But there are quite a ways from being able to figure out something like that.
This is Mike in Lincolnwood on the score. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Yeah, how you guys doing? Yeah, you know, one interesting thing I've been thinking about with the Sox, where their rebuild is a little different, and see if you agree. It would appear to have anywhere between 3 and 6 guys already up that are going to be part of this rebuild. And I'll tell you the guys I'm talking about. Carlos Rodon, Tim Anderson. I'm talking guys that are 26 years old or less. Uh-huh. So I have to put Avi Garcia into that. And I have to put Matt Davidson into that, okay?
Yeah,
so,
I'll give you the first two.
Whoa, let me finish. When the Cubs started their rebuild,
It was just a conversation, Mike.
Finish what I was going to say.
Yeah.
They had absolutely nobody up there when they started their rebuild. The Sox have guys up already that are going to be there when these other guys come up. They already have guys up there. That's the difference. The Cubs had absolutely zero players up there that are part of the rebuild. These guys will...
But the question, Mike, is how long is it going to take? And then are you willing to hold on to all those guys for that long? Like, are you willing to hold on to Avisail Garcia for another 2 years and see what you have there? And then you got to pay him. Yeah, 2 years.
He's only going to be 28 then. I mean, you know, the guy's primes are between 27 and 32 usually.
Yeah, if you believe that he has turned. And I don't know. I mean, Matt Davidson's a guy I want to see play to see if he can develop into an everyday guy, but I don't believe that right now.
I think your assumption is completely flawed. I mean, I don't think you have any possible way to know whether Tim Anderson's going to be a part of this 5 years from now or whether Rodon will be.
Rodon? Are you kidding me? Okay, give me a break. I thought you know a little bit about the game of baseball. You don't think Rodon?
So you're certain that Rodon's going to stay healthy and be part of a rotation 5 years from now? How can you possibly predict that? Who knows? He certainly has the talent. We have no idea whether he's going to be here. You're talking about 5 years from now.
Yeah. You can't predict that any pitcher is going to be in any pitcher.
Correct. Exactly. So that's why you continue to collect them.
But he's part of the rebuild, Rodon, is what I'm trying to say. Don't you think so? How old is he, 23?
Yeah, you're hoping that he is, of course. But you'll see where you are. You'll see where you are in 2 years. He's part of it in terms of you're not going to get rid of him. Thank you, Mike.
And
thanks for your education.
And
we
everybody,
we
certainly appreciate your help on that. Everybody thought Starlin Castro. I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people thought Starlin Castro were going to be a huge part of this Cubs thing, right? I mean, that was at his age and with what he had accomplished already at that point. As I look back on this list from 2013, the second year.
And then they signed him. Theo and Jed signed him to the team-friendly contract,
yeah.
Which ended up making him easier to trade.
Right.
Didn't get a whole lot for that. But Starlin had gone down into the crapper for about a year and a half by the time they ended up dealing him.
The point is, Tim Anderson, who knows? I mean, who knows?
Yeah, but I'm worried about Tim Anderson.
Well, 21 errors and could easily have probably 5 to 8 more than that.
And the strikeout-to-walk ratio is not so good. But very young player,
really?
Incredibly team-friendly contract. You got plenty of time to let him play and figure it out.
Very talented, very athletic. You have every right to consider the possibility that he might be here. But again, if you're talking about 3, 4, 5 years from now, who mm-hmm. knows? And guess what? You don't have to make that decision.
No, you got time to make that decision.
But we do appreciate the education.
Thank you, Mike and Lincolnwood. Hope you got a good argument out of that, Mike. Hope
you
it felt
guys
good.
You guys are idiots. You don't know anything.
Hey, man, some people want to fight. You know, you need a good fight. I'm not one
do
of
you?
Them. I don't. This segment is brought to you by Go-Go Squeeze. Things are so different today. Kids have turned down snack time trades because of Go-Go Squeeze. All natural, just 100% orchard fresh apples and other wholesome fruit. Kids love it, and so will yours. That's true, actually. My kid loves it. Go-Go Squeeze. It is the score. Let's hear from the guy in charge of picking the amateur players and helping to develop them on the White Sox. You'll hear from him next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. It's the Spiegel and Parkins Show. Top of the hour, Jeff Passan will join us as he always does on Mondays. And we're going to talk to Eloy Jimenez, your brand new White Sox big-time prospect, the former Cub prospect. Eloy Jimenez will be on the show in the final hour. He is Barry Rosner sitting here with me, and he hosts Hit and Run, the greatest baseball show in this town. Damn it, he and Joe Ostrowski yesterday had a chance to talk to Nick Hostetler, director of amateur scouting for the White Sox, and they asked Nick, among other things, if he believes when talking about players in considering them with floors and ceilings.
It's something that we put on a guy just to give us an opportunity to then compare to another player. You know, we're all ultimately. We don't know the end answer to that.
Yeah.
So there's wiggle room on both sides of that. And, you know, while a lot of scouting and a lot of evaluating is revolving around experience and comparing what you've seen with player A to maybe what you saw from a guy that reminds you of him 4 or 5 years ago. And when you're looking at what that player ended up doing and what are the similarities here and what is the floor of this player, what is the ceiling of that player, you like to compare that to other players to kind of give you a baseline of whether they reach that ceiling or not. You know, ultimately, I think, and you've, all the fans and the media have seen it here in the last couple of years, the way that we've went about player acquisition, whether that through trade or draft, we've tried to limit the floor, so to speak. We've tried to raise that floor a little bit just because if you have too big of a gap between that ceiling and floor, the volatility of that player, it's really hard to predict. And you have to have a lot of those type of guys to maybe just get one or two.
I heard Jed Hoyer throw a comp of Jermaine Dye on Eloy Jimenez the other day. Do you have a comp for him?
I am, and anybody that knows me will know this, I hate comps. I think they're the most unfair. I think they're unfair to the player. I think they're also unfair to the person that you're comping to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and a little bit of a story, Jeremy Haber and I, our assistant GM, Jeremy bought me a Nerf gun this year in the draft room to shoot a guy whenever he compares a guy to a Hall of Famer. So, yes. you know, Eloy's just a tremendous talent. And I mean, when you have a chance to see him in person and see how big and strong he is, and to think that he's still only 20 years old with that type of power, I can see why a Jermaine comp has been put on him. And Jed's an extremely smart man that I wouldn't argue with him on a comp he gives.
Why do you like Dylan Cease?
Big power arm. You know, Dylan's a kid we have seen since he's been 15, 16 years old. Just different games throughout Georgia and at the perfect game tournaments that they have in Georgia. And, you know, the power was there. You know, unfortunately for him, he had the injury his senior year that required Tommy John, and it caused his draft stock to fall, though he still was paid like a higher pick. But it's a three-pitch mix with frontline starter ceiling. You know, it's about 97, 98 miles an hour on the fastball with a breaking ball that, you know, falls off the table. He's got a solid feel for a changeup, and obviously the numbers show there's going to be some refinement that needs to be done with the mechanics to help him throw some more strikes. But I mean, look, with our track record with pitching, I'll put that up against anybody's in the league. So feel very confident turning a player with his ability over to our pitching guys.
I had a scout tell me the other day, Nick, that he thought that Jimenez's ceiling was actually higher than Moncada's. I mean, he's just one guy. It's just one opinion. Doesn't mean he's right. And I don't know if you want to get into comparing two players that have very different games, but as you look at those two, could you see why someone would say that?
No, absolutely. And I think you're right on with trying to compare two different types of player in Moncada and Eloy. But, you know, I think that I understand why guys see that. You see the bigger, stronger build that he has, and you compare him to Moncada's. It's more of a stockier, strong, smaller in stature type player that, you know, ultimately I think when you look at these things and all down the road, you go and look back and what they end up becoming, and you look back at what has been said 4 or 5 years before, I don't think it would shock me. I don't think it would shock any of us. And I think that's why he was one of the major focal points of what Rick was trying to do here in this deal.
I was listening to an interview with Kopech from the Futures game, and he sounds like a very, very confident guy who believes that he knows best, and I'm sure he'd like to be, I'm sure he thinks he should be here already. How do you balance his confidence against getting him to do the kind of things that the organization wants him to do?
Yeah, I don't think that Michael Kopech's ever going to be short of confidence. If anybody ever uses the line, he's lost some confidence, I will be totally floored. You know, I think the big thing with that and what Getsy and Buddy and our pitching coaches try to do with guys similar to Michael is you just try to make sure they understand that their energy, their efforts, is going in the right direction. And your focus is on the game of baseball. Your focus is on your side days. Your focus is on your bullpens to get better and know that prize, that light at the end of the tunnel, once you hit Birmingham is not far away. So, you know, just channeling Michael's energy and that confidence in making sure that it is moving towards that direction being Chicago, that, you know, everything will work out. And, you know, the one thing I will say about Michael since we've gotten him, he has been a tremendous kid. He's been a great teammate. I think it's been a huge help to Spencer Adams. I know he's pushed Spencer, and Spencer has started to bounce back and has had a terrific year. So, as well as Jordan Guerrero, you know, they see Michael and the effort he's putting in, and they're jumping up.
So, you know, if they brought in another pitcher, maybe. I was surprised Eddie Butler went to the bullpen as opposed to Montgomery, because Butler's pitched well. So, I mean, they could maybe find a way to have the depth for Lackey to become a six starter. Interesting that we're not hearing talk about the six-man rotation to preserve the arms of guys like we did last year. Obviously a different situation in the standings.
He's Phil Rogers, MLB.com. And Phil, you know, Arrieta said over the weekend that he doesn't want to go, but if he does go, he wants another World Series ring. It was the right thing to say when you're in Baltimore as well, you know, the team that traded you to the Cubs. That does his value, does what he whatever he does in the second half, does that impact the Cubs conversation at all? Or have they talked enough to know that there's really no meeting ground here for the two sides?
Probably more the latter. But, you know, he's not overwhelming other teams either. You know, their scouts are seeing the same thing as the Cubs. He was much better this last time out, whether it was having the extra rest, his velocity was up. I don't see him getting a mega long-term contract for the Cubs, but his postseason record, he's a guy you want to see in October, and I don't necessarily read that much into the bad year he's had this year. I think if this is going to be the last year he's with the Cubs, it becomes even more important for the Cubs to get to October, because with Jake, they have a guy that's sort of a proven big-game guy. So I don't know that anything would change it, but it's an intriguing scenario to watch play out to see how Jake pitches in September and October if they can get there.
And David Robertson, now it seems like the Yankees and Red Sox are, you know, they sent scouts out to the Sox game yesterday, and there was a lot of talk during the national game last night about Todd Frazier and how much sense he makes for the Red Sox. It seems like Robertson makes more sense for the Yankees at this point. With Robertson, that's the guy. Is that the last piece that Rick Hahn has to play here in the rebuild? Because it doesn't seem like Avi Garcia's name comes up in any conversation. Melky would be a rental. You're not going to get much for him. And Frazier on his own, it doesn't seem to be a big return coming that way. So maybe if you package he and Robertson, you get a little bit more for your bang for your buck.
Well, Rick's done very well getting value with the guys he's traded, so maybe he can wring more out of it. But Robertson, there was almost no interest in him for much of last offseason and the season. Same thing with Todd Frazier. So I'm not sure that they're big, high-value pieces. I think Avi is interesting because he's a guy that, you know, you saw with the with Jose Quintana, the Atlanta Braves, who aren't in the race this year, wanted in on that. And I think with Avi, you can open up trade markets to some other teams because of his, 2 years been having 2 years left on his contract after this year, 2 years of control. If a team, you know, looked around and said, look, this guy, he got in shape. He's a different guy than the past. You know, even a non-contending team could step up. So I would have some Avisael Garcia trade talks were I Rick Hahn.
Phil, nobody can beat the Dodgers as it is, but are they actually going to add?
I would guess they would add, yeah. I mean, they've been very conservative, though, in the kind of pieces that they've added in the past, and they haven't been willing to move any of the top prospects. And I can remember last winter, me, Phil Rogers, thinking Jose Quintana to the Dodgers, Bellinger would be a good guy to go back to the White Sox.
Oh, man.
You see these guys on the field as opposed to just looking at the stats, and you can certainly understand why the Dodgers would hold on to the prospect capital that they acquired. I would guess that the Dodgers, their bullpen has been much better this year than it was last year, but that's always a piece. And the back end of their rotation, even though they have a ton of guys, they don't really have a lot of sure things there. So they could. The Astros are a team that's going to probably figure out a way to get a starting pitcher. They could be in on Sonny Gray. And you know, Cub fans, I think it pains Cub fans to do this, but you got to keep an eye on the Brewers and see what they do over the deadline, because I think they're going to try to bring in some starting pitching depth, too.
And now the Cardinals, and we'll let you go, Phil. Now the Cardinals are being mentioned in Miami, as you mentioned, and also with Detroit with J.D. Martinez. So it'll be interesting to see how the Brewers and Cardinals respond and how aggressive they get as we get closer to the deadline. Great catching up with you. Take care of yourself. We'll talk soon. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks,
Ben. So he's been a tremendous addition to the organization.
That is Nick Hostetler talking about some of those White Sox prospects. I think it's really important and good for Sox fans to hear that voice. That is a different guy and a new guy in charge of an incredibly important area than this organization has ever had.
Just the amateur scouting, but any time that they're about to go make a deal, uh-huh. This is a guy who knew this player 3 or 4 years ago, probably before he was even drafted or signed. So he knows a lot more about him maybe than anybody else.
An incredibly important addition, and as I say, important for Sox fans to hear. Let's react to it, and we'll read some of your reaction next.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, so now, Barry Rosner, you got all these kids. You got all these players here. They're in your system, some at low A, some at high A. Got a couple at double A that you've had before. There's a few at triple A, but you got them at various spots along the way. And there are texters wondering this, and there's a call, Bill in St. Charles, wondering this as well. Bill, ask your question.
Yeah, that is my biggest concern, because on paper this looks fantastic as we add and add and add. And other than Coop, I'm not very familiar with the results, or the, I should say, the coaches that would produce the results that we need these kids to develop. Is there the coaching staff there to support this young talent and get them ready for the next level? Because based on the track record that I've seen, I just haven't seen it historically from the Sox, and that's my concern.
I think that is a very fair question, and anytime you're doing something as big as what they're doing, and certainly we covered it a lot with the Cubs, you have to overhaul lots of things. Like, every level needs to have the same methodology, your same marking points as you're watching guys and saying, okay, he's ready for the next level. Like, everybody's got to be cohesive in that way. It's got to be incredibly well run. It's helpful if technology-wise you upgrade so everybody's got the same cameras that have the same angles in all of your ballparks along the way. This is some stuff that the Cubs definitely did. And it's, you know, people who are, you know, your overall organizational development bosses who are traveling around and going everywhere. For years, the Twins had Tom Kelly doing that. After he stopped being a manager, he would be going around to every level and making sure that they've got that. So how much have the White Sox invested in that kind of developmental overhaul since they've chosen this new path?
Sorry, I laughed when you were talking about all the things that the Cubs did to make sure that there was continuity from top to bottom. It was a very different world, but I can remember Don Zimmer on the first day that all the minor league managers, coaches, roving instructors, and otherwise were there. And he would get them all together and say, this is what I expect from players when we call them up to the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted them to be able to do certain things. Look, I'm going to need to hit and run.
That's a baseball lifer who'd been at every spot along the way in an organization.
I'm going to need them to not get picked off a second in the ninth inning. I'm going to need them to be able to execute a bunt in extra innings if we're trying to move a runner. You know, I'm going to need these things, real simple things that are not nearly so simple anymore because people just aren't taught the game at the minor league level the way they used to be. So now you have the Cubs with the Cubs way.
Right.
Literally a manual about how they want things done.
Which is, it's something that the Orioles did after the Cardinals did it. Remember the Orioles, Earl Weaver was in the Cardinals system and learned the Cardinals way before he brought that to Baltimore, right? And it's like, and then, you know, you've seen great organizations have that kind of cohesion. Do the White Sox have that now? It's a good question.
I know this. I know that it's talked about a lot. I know they've made a lot of changes. I like a lot of their people. I like Hostetler. I like Chris Getz. Extremely aggressive in terms of wanting to get everybody on the same page.
Chris Getz is the guy they bring in from Kansas City, a former White Sox, yes, but he had a couple years to learn how they do it in Kansas City, which is a place that has obviously done it well for a little while.
Kirk Champion has a lot of experience along these lines. But I think your most important guys might be your pitching coaches at the lower level. And, of course, your roving instructors are important.
Those guys. Like, you know the pitching coach is in Milwaukee now? You know who the pitching coach is? It's Derek Anderson, the former pitching coach at Vanderbilt for Sonny Gray and David Price and lots of others. But he was in the Cubs organization. Remember, they hired him as their minor league pitching coordinator.
Yeah.
And he was there for a long time. Theo brought him up when we were talking about the Brewers a couple weeks ago. Said, well, they got a great pitching coach, a former Cub.
Wasn't he Sonny Gray's pitching coach?
Sonny Gray and David Price.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have rovers in Richard Dotson and Mike Ellinger who are really good at what they do. That's important. Your rovers got to be good because that plays a huge role in your continuity. But I think Steve McCaddy, I've heard really good things about Steve McCaddy. You smile because you think Oakland A's.
I think of the Billy Martin rotation.
But I've heard great things about Steve McCaddy.
And that's a new guy they brought in.
As your AAA pitching coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
who's a manager down
Martin
there?
Martin Grudzelana.
Grudzelana.
These guys have to be teachers.
Yeah.
And they got to be moms and dads and teachers and psychologists.
And they all got to talk to each other. All your computer systems have to be in line and connected. And some of this stuff may sound silly when I say it like that about the technology. I just remember what Theo and Jed had to face and everything that they did. Because, my God, they were taking an organization out of the Stone Age.
It was like John McDonough walking into the Blackhawks and finding out there's no front office. There's literally no front office. How do you do this? There's nobody here. You gotta hire like 10,000 people. The pitching coach at AA is Jose Bautista, really good communicator.
Mm.
And again, important that you're able to. This sounds ridiculous. It sounds so simple,
yeah.
Matt.
Yeah.
But to be able to speak a couple languages and mm-hmm. to be able to communicate and to understand what young guys are going through. And generally speaking, your best minor league guys are going to be guys who didn't have it easy,
mm-hmm.
who have a good understanding of how difficult it is.
Let me, from the corrections department, Derek Johnson is the former
Vanderbilt pitching coach.
Now Milwaukee. I said Derek Anderson because there are so many Derek Andersons. There was a basketball Derek Anderson.
Yep.
There was the quarterback Derek Anderson. But Derek Johnson, there's also a lot of Derek Johnsons, as we know.
Who's been the best Derek Anderson?
God, it's a good question. The basketball player went to Kentucky, right? And was a Cavalier.
I don't know if we could go a full round of a drafting Derek Anderson.
How about Derek Johnson's? What if we only took Derek Johnson's and Derek Anderson's? I'll take the Chiefs middle linebacker. Love that guy. Right? But anyway, Derek Johnson's the Vanderbilt coach. And also, I got chunks of guys like you in my stool and the, you are blind as a bat, and I have sight. That is Phil Hartman's Sinatra.
I thought so. I didn't want to correct you.
The better of the two Sinatras.
Yeah, and he also did the Sinatra group, right? Didn't Phil Hartman do the Sinatra group?
Instead of the McLaughlin group.
Which I drafted in the SNL. I killed all of you guys in the SNL draft. Let's just say that now.
We will take a break and come back, continue with your phone calls, texts, and conversation. Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports at the top of the hour here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Ah. Welcome back in to the Spiegel and Parkins Show. It's Spiegs and Barry Rosner here with you. Jeff Passan and baseball conversation at the top of the hour. When you've had a morning, let Taco Bell make it a little better with the new breakfast quesadilla. Fluffy eggs, crispy bacon, and melty cheese pressed inside a warm grilled tortilla. Thank you to Taco Bell for sponsoring this segment. Rosner, I'm having trouble because I need to stop encouraging my son, and I cannot stop encouraging him.
This could be so many things.
He makes me laugh, and when he makes me laugh, and I laugh, I thereby encourage him to go down a particular conversational path.
This is learned behavior.
Because he likes getting laughs. Because he's my kid, or just a kid in general.
He has a lot of things in common with those who do that. One, he's human.
Uh-huh.
He's a boy, which yes. in particular lends to this behavior.
That is true.
And he's a Spiegel.
He's a Spiegel, so he's got troubles.
He's got a lot of things going against him.
His favorite word right now, and really concept with a lot of words that circulate around this particular item, is butt. He thinks the word butt is funny, the concept of everybody having a butt, what the butt does, the functionality of a butt. And just what if things were butts, et cetera. There's a whole realm of humor there that I think we can all agree remains funny.
Look around. Do you see that changing any time for him in the next 30, 40 years? Jay and Rick and I just had a five-minute conversation about something related to that whole situation.
There was a day, I think it was like a month ago, where Jay and I spent probably good 10 minutes listening to a YouTube file of uh-huh. different fart sounds.
Oh, yeah.
And we were dying the entire time.
Well, yeah, this is the problem. We are human. We are men.
And I cannot stop encouraging the man. We're driving into the city, pick him up at Mommy's.
It might be the best thing you'll ever have in common with him.
That might be it. You're totally right. He might never give a crap about any of the sports I like or
no
the music.
No pun intended. You may be able to share that forever.
Well, it has already begun. We're driving into the city. And, on 90 or 9094 right there around Armitage and like, hey, Ruben, there's you see the tower with the spiky things? I said, Daddy, that's the Sears Tower. And I said, well, how about the other one? And pointing to the Hancock. And he says, yeah, I know that one, too. And I said, what's it called? And he said, the Butt Tower. And I laughed like hell. Thought it was incredibly funny. And this is where I have a problem. I laugh. I shouldn't laugh and encourage him. And I said, what do you think it smells like at the top of the Butt Tower? And he said, farts. And he's laughing. And I, too, am laughing. It's a good, reasonable thought as to what it smells like. And I said, what color is it up there, do you think? And he said, brown. And he's laughing. And all of a sudden, I'm in viable conversation with a five-year-old where I'm barely holding my own.
Yeah, if Mama were around, what would happen is you would laugh, and this would continue, and then you would pretend to get stern and say that, you know, that's really not something we should do in public, though.
Right.
And then you just keep on laughing. But at least you've attempted. You've made you. And later you can say, hey, I tried. I did the best I could.
Right. Right. I'm not trying. I'm not doing the best I can at all. I'm doing the absolute least I can and thoroughly encouraging this level of bonding in spite of myself because I'm laughing like hell.
I think there are a lot of things you have to worry about as it applies to your kids and what they're going to do when they grow up or even what they do when they're kids and all the trouble they can get into and what have you. I don't think this is one of them.
No.
I think this is fine. I wouldn't worry about it.
And if
he happens to go to school and say the wrong thing, then just blame it on his mother.
Well, see, and remember, I'm going with the realness because I think I've told you this before. Remember, my mom didn't let us say farts in the house. My mom thought that that was a disgusting word, and she made us say air bowel, which is 20 times more disgusting than fart. Air bowel was what my mom made all the little Spiegel kids say. And, you know, it didn't last a lifetime. let me tell you that.
Wow.
We eventually
could have been
pushed
worse.
Back.
It could have been worse. We never had any chocolate in my house.
Which
explains a lot about me.
That really does explain a lot about you. I want to know if you feel vindicated by somebody's success. I'll ask you about that next when we come back, and then Jeff Passan at the top of the hour.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Garcia in the air left field. Motter back, warning track. Wally's done it twice this afternoon.
I know we've all talked about it, but I think every human being continues to mature. He's a young man who's continuing to mature and get more and more comfortable in his own skin. I think the confidence that comes with becoming an all-star certainly plays a part in that. I think he's carrying himself extremely well. He's a professional. I think that it's something he's going to be able to build upon and keep moving forward, and hopefully it's a part of who he's going to become, you know, perpetually moving forward.
That's Rick Renteria. Boy, that's great stuff. That's a great cut about Avisail Garcia, and I know
I absolutely do not mature as I get older, by the way.
Well, that's too bad. That's unfortunate for you and your family. I do.
You have no idea.
I do. I don't consider myself a finished product as a human right now. Today, I have more things that I can learn and get better at. And,
I'm regressing.
Yeah.
I'm regressing by the day. But as it applies to baseball, I truly feel like the more I think I know, the less I know. It is amazing how much, like, just studying the swing, sometimes just listening to a guy like Jim Thome talk about the swing, I realize how very little I know about the game and how much I continue to try to absorb all the time.
It's the most complex in terms of the fact that the difference between being terrible and being really, really good is so small. It's just so small. The difference between, a 250 hitter and a 350 hitter, or a 310 OBP and a 410 OBP.
It's a ground ball with eyes. It's It's so, a dying quail.
So for years we talked, and I would say, I don't need to see any more of Avisaíl García. And I'm not alone. Everybody in this town gave up at some point along the way. But you held on longer than most. I'll give you that. You held on for like an extra year and a half or two telling me he's only had X number of at-bats. You know, he's too – you don't give up on him just yet. And everybody was ready to give up, including the White Sox themselves, I think. And now here he is, having definitely improved and learned something. I don't know if he's going to stay this guy forever, but he's definitely a different guy in terms of mental focus, in terms of the weight he took off, in terms of the work habits and the comfort at the plate.
Yeah, no, but I can't take any credit because by the end of last season...
You were done.
I said, well, here's what I said. I can't defend it anymore. I can't defend my position on this anymore. I just can't because there was... How could a logical person do so, right, at that point?
The only way you can is by looking back on your entire life of watching and dissecting baseball and realizing that it does happen eventually for some. For some.
And for some, never. It's just that in the face of so much information and so much evidence, I just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, I stopped doing it, and I think it was – and you're right. I held out for a long time, but I – And that's no badge of honor, by the way.
Oh, I think I'm giving it to you. You had an extra 18 months in Avisaíl García's camp.
But by the end of last year, I said, I cannot defend my position on this anymore. I understand where everybody is on this. I'll just say this. I'm really happy for the guy. I'm really happy for the because he has been through a lot, and he might have been pretty close to the end of his White Sox career, maybe not his baseball career, but his White Sox career had this not gone well for him this year. And he's the guy that I saw in Detroit. We used to have this conversation on the air on Hit and Run back before I had to fire you, and that was that the guy I saw in Detroit could do everything on a baseball field. Now, he's not doing that. He doesn't field as well as he was when he was in Detroit because he weighs more than he did. He doesn't run that well anymore. And he ran the bases really well then, and he's not as quick on the base paths as he used to be. Mm-hmm. But the guy I saw in Detroit could do everything on a baseball field, including hit for average and hit for power, and it's...
And he's doing that now.
It's happening.
It's power to all fields. It's power to all fields. It's the ability to turn on the inside heater so he doesn't get tied up in there like he always used to.
Now the logical next question is that because he finally gained some confidence? Is because there's no pressure on this team whatsoever? Is it because there's some guys gone from the clubhouse?
Something changed him.
The clubhouse is a different place. The manager is a very different guy. There's a lot of things going in his favor, but it won't always stay that way either. He's going to have to continue to do this now. And whatever happens the rest of this year, assuming he's back, he comes into next year with expectations.
That's absolutely correct. Let's get an update from Kevin Zipak. And then Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports is next. No break.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.